Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the Rick Shields Golf Show podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Rick Shields. I'm here with co-host on episode 128, and we've got a special guest.
It's taken 128 episodes for you to interview me. Thanks.
Well, every time every time I've asked you, you're straight out decline, and I've needed
Leaves you on red.
I've needed to literally come to your home here at Close House, not your actual technical home, but your golfing home, to sit down and have a podcast with Lee Westwood.
Let's see if it was worth it.
High expectations now.
Well, thanks for coming on. How are you? Are you good?
Very well, yeah.
You having a good year?
Yeah, not bad.
Enjoying life? You've just been talking about football and how you're getting very excited about Notts Forest.
Consuming my life at the moment, watching Forest.
Is that like your real sporting passion outside of golf?
Yeah. I hadn't have been a golfer, I would have played on the left wing for Forest, I think. Yeah.
Were you good at football growing up?
It was all right.
Really?
Yeah, not bad.
And was there ever a point where it was like you had to make a decision whether you like, or was golf just the obvious one?
Golf was the obvious one, but I played all sports when I was growing up, so golf didn't mix well with football, running, rugby.
Really? You played that many?
Yeah.
Many other kind of... I feel like there's a lot of golfers that either get into like hockey or cricket. Yeah. Were there any things you got into? Tennis?
No. There's not much tennis in Worksop. I was not cross country champion, so I was a pretty good runner.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Ran for Worksop areas.
No way. And then golf.
Well, when I was about nine, that was.
And then golf kicked in. Did you start quite early golf?
No, not really. I was about 12, 13 years of age.
Wow.
And I got good quickly, won the county championship at 14. And then from kind of that age, that year, started getting recognised on nationally and got picked for England. I was about 15, 16, played at Nairn, my first home internationals. And then that was when I kind of really just decided to play golf. I figured if I was in the best 12 boys in the country, then, you know, I got a chance of making it professionally at some level.
You were doing all right.
Yeah, I was doing all right.
You've had an incredible career. First ever Open Championship in 1996.
'95
it was. Obviously, you know that better than me. St. Andrews. I should have known this, shouldn't I?
Don't worry, I'll pick you up on any wrong facts.
Like, when you look back at your career now, like, what's your thoughts of it all? Because it's been, obviously, 27 years.
Close.
Why's my math so bad?
It's my 29th season as a pro. You're actually getting further away. You said 96 and 95. You said 27 when it's 29. So.
Well, you get what I mean. It's near enough.
Do you want to look at your notes?
No, it's not going to
be. Can you not tell?
So, like, when you look back at it now, what do you think of it all?
I think I've been lucky to do something that I love for so long.
Yeah.
And do it well.
Yeah.
Take me to a lot of nice places and met a lot of great people. Not something you expect when you first, you know, start practicing, hitting balls up at Worksop Golf Club on the range.
Yeah.
Playing with your mates. It's kind of not a path that you envisage.
Super consistent as well over a long time. Like, I started playing in 96, 97, and obviously you were out then, and today you're still, like, performing, competing at that super elite level. There's not many other people I can think of that have done that for that long.
No, I think you're right. You know, there's a handful probably. I don't know why. I love the game, obviously. You know, I've always had... Somebody said to me, it's not about the destination, it's about the journey. And I've always loved the journey, yeah. The game of golf. You know, I've loved going and practicing. You know, I've loved the travelling. You know, I've loved the competitiveness. I've loved challenging myself all the time.
Yeah.
Seeing, and now, you know, I'm in that area where I maybe don't practice as much as I used to hitting balls, but I practice on other things that I know are going to make me play well. So it's kind of a different branch off to the journey. So, you know, I do a lot more gym work now and flexibility work and psychological work. And sort of view golf differently now. I'm not so consumed with the outcome anymore.
Yeah. Because you enjoy the journey so much.
Yeah.
But like I say, it's just a slightly different journey.
Yeah, and I know if I kind of dedicate myself to the journey and do that properly, I know that I'm still good enough to compete in certain tournaments.
That is staggering. And what still gives you the motivation? What drives you? What gets Lee Westwood every single week on week or every tournament to put your most effort into it?
Well, I enjoy it, first and foremost. You know, I love going and hitting balls and I love practicing my short game and my putting. I like challenging myself all the time. I think, you know, you're never satisfied in golf, are you?
You can never complete it. That's the thing.
I've shot 60 and I've always felt, you know, and I sat down after that round and thought, could have been one or two better.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it?
Crazy. Yeah. Well, that's it. What, like, there is no...
You never master it, do you?
Well, unless you can quite literally go around in 18 shots.
Yeah.
Which is physically pretty impossible.
Yeah.
You can't master it. Because even 18 under, you think, well, why don't I eagle the par fives? You know, it's absolutely
crazy.
You'll
have missed a putt somewhere, or...
Yeah. There's going to be a not perfect shot somewhere along the line.
Does that change when you win a tournament? You're never thinking, oh, I won by three. But I should have won by five. Are you just happy just to get that win? Or have you ever won and still thought, I could have even done better?
No, I don't think you think about wins like that.
Yeah.
You know, you're always pleased to have won a golf tournament, whether it be in a playoff or by 8, 9.
Yeah.
And wins come in all different shapes and sizes, don't they? You know, I've come from 6 or 7 shots back in the final round and I've had 5 or 6 shot leads. So, you know... That is a challenge in itself to mentally get your head around those kind of situations. So,
what would you prefer to be in if you had an option? Would you rather be 3 ahead on the final round or 3 back?
I'd rather be 3 ahead. You know, you've got, as long as you get your, I've always thought when you're 3 ahead, go out and try and shoot the lowest score of the day from anybody in the field.
You can't
be
beaten.
You can't be beaten.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's, and I think that comes with experience. You know, I've had big leads and lost them, and I've had big leads and won. And, you know, you learn through those experiences the right mentality and mindset to have when you go out.
What is your single career highlight? What's the best thing, if you could give it one thing, what's been the best thing that's happened to you in your career?
Oh, I think becoming world number one. You know, you're best in the world. You can sit down in a room like this and look out into the world and realise there's a lot of people play the game of golf and there's nobody better than you.
That's awesome.
It's weird to think about it like that.
And it creeps up on you at different times as well. I could be walking through the supermarket and I'll think, I'm best golfer in this supermarket.
That guy that's buying today's golfer, I'm better than you.
Oh my goodness. I've got the stats to prove it.
I bet that's crazy. Because did it give you like a huge level of confidence when you're even at events? Like thinking best golfer.
When I became world number one, I went out in the tournaments after that and I finished like second and won one and third and kind of reinforced that, you know, I had the consistency that would take me to world number one, even when I became world number one. Now the interesting thing comes when you do reach the top, the pinnacle, you look down and you think, all these people are after my spot now. So it brings its added challenges.
Of course.
You know, there's one thing getting there, but then there's another thing staying there and having everybody try and take your spot.
What do you think at the moment with the kind of story with like Scotty becoming world number one in a ridiculous short period of time?
Well, I mean, he's had an incredible run. When you look back, he was their weakest player at the last Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
World rankings wise. Yeah. Was he 21st or something like that?
And I remember when he got picked, it was like, you know, really? He's no experience. And you'll know better than me, I can't remember how he did in the Ryder Cup, but obviously the team did well. But
yeah.
And then from the start of this,
I don't think I played him, but
And then start of this year, just gone on this incredible run. And do you think, again, it's that mindset of as soon as obviously you win and you win a couple and you become world number one, like you go into the next event, think, well, how can I be beaten almost?
It gives you an added confidence. And one thing it does do, it has shown, is that the world rankings are accurate.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, a lot of people question the world rankings. I've never questioned them because I know how hard it is to get to the top of them. And he's gone on a phenomenal run, won tournaments, and has been rewarded by getting to world number one. He's done it quickly.
Yeah, really quickly.
So it's not like, I guess they are volatile when you look at them like that, when you can get to be the best in the world so quickly, but they don't lie because they're over a 2-year period.
Of course.
So you've got to play consistently well.
And when you win huge events against incredible fields, guess what? You're going to shoot up that world ranking.
You're beating the best players regularly, aren't you, in the biggest tournaments?
Well, one thing we were saying on our last episode of the podcast is that, like, certainly for this Open coming up now, there's so many players who you wouldn't be surprised if they won. There's such a strong field out there. Is this one of the strongest kind of fields you've ever seen, you think, in your career? Or has there been periods where there's been loads of guys that could win? It feels like at the moment there's just so many names, like Dustin Johnson, obviously, Scottie Scheffler, you know, John Rahm, Spieth, etc. could go on. There's loads of guys.
I don't look at it like that, no. I think, there's been strength in depth for the last 25 years. You know, certainly since Tiger came on the scene, he's elevated everybody's level of play and made everybody more professional, and that in turn has made strength of fields deeper. You know, nobody leaves anything to chance anymore since he came on the scene. So, you know, professional golfers are more rounded.
Yeah.
And, you know, they tick more boxes now.
Well, they need to be, otherwise they're going to fall back.
Yeah, one thing about the Open Championship, it's at St Andrews, gives everybody a chance. Mm. You know, it's not a bomber's golf course, although length's always an advantage on any golf course if you hit it straight. But you look at winners around there, you've got big hitters back in, you know,
John Daly.
Jack's day. Jack was a big hitter. Tiger, John Daly. And then you've got
Zach Johnson.
Likes of Zach Johnson. Yeah. Louis's not short, but he isn't one of the sort of bombers. He's more of a, he's more aesthetically pleasing, isn't he?
Yeah.
Does everything nicely.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, different players have played. I think back to Faldo winning there.
Yeah.
Not the longest, but people in contention with Greg Norman and Payne Stewart. I think Ian Baker Finch was up there. So it does suit everybody, really.
Are you looking forward to it this year?
Yeah, I am. I always look forward to the Open Championship, and I always look forward to ones at St Andrews just a little bit more. They just seem to encapsulate the Open Championship when it's at St Andrews.
It's just like a magical atmosphere. I feel like, obviously, we just talked about before, record-breaking crowds there this year. Like, I was up there just this week and the grandstands are going off and it just feels so exciting. And a lot of the players we spoke to, a lot of people who are going, it just feels a bit different this year, whether it's because it is the 150th, whether it is because it's kind of, there's so many big names, as we just mentioned, kind of playing really well, and obviously Tiger saying he's committing to it and things like that. It just feels like it's got an air that's way bigger than what I've experienced before. But I might be wrong. Have you known an Open Championship in kind of your career that's felt bigger than this?
I haven't really noticed it, so I would have to say no. I try and treat all tournaments the same. But like I said before, the Open Championship does always feel a little bit more special when it's at St Andrews. But I don't get that feeling. I think, you know, media and people like that are building it up because it's the 150th and it's a story for... I mean, you've got nothing else to write about in golf at the moment, have you? So, might as well big the Open up this year.
Yeah, absolutely nothing at all to talk about. I think, you're probably not far wrong. Like, I feel like super excited about it. But like I say, we're working in the golf media business.
It's when you're going as a fan as well, though. Yeah. Like, I loved Carnoustie. Obviously, for you guys playing, it's an amazing golf course. But as a fan, it's kind of quite secluded on its own. Yeah. But when you know you're going to that town with the hustle and the bustle of the week's like festivities as such, I'm excited for that.
Do you not think COVID's done that, though? You know, everybody had two years of, you know, restrictions and not being able to go to sporting events and, you know, had that taken away, and now everybody's kind of been let off the lead, haven't they? Yep. And you know, they're appreciating being able to do stuff like that, yeah, more. So
true.
You know, it certainly felt like that at the Masters.
You got a bit of sense of that as well. Like everyone, yeah, was like, "Whoa, this is, yeah, this is big."
And great to be back. Yeah,
exactly. I think going back to your point a minute ago about these players and everyone looking stronger, it's probably again exactly what you mentioned, because the golf media and Golf Analysis and Sky and Golf Channel and everything else make such a big deal about who's going to win the next major. Like you could analyze it till, you know, death, yeah, going through the top 100 players to say he'll win, they'll win, this one, where I feel like probably 30 years ago that wasn't the case, because social media obviously wasn't as big and it wasn't as analyzed as such.
Yeah, I mean, you've got more stats now, and it's,
yeah,
everything's so analytical that yeah, it's just broken down, isn't it?
Are you quite analytical?
I have to pay a certain amount of attention to stats, but they can lie a lot of the time. Depends how you interpret them.
So, really? Yeah. What are the ones that you focus on mainly?
The score at the end of the week.
Score and winning checks.
Yeah. Yeah, the bank balance. Yeah. When you look at like greens in regulation, you could be an aggressive player. You know, the professional game now, they put pins on 3 yards from the edge. If you hit it on the fringe, 3 yards from the, or three yards and a couple of inches from the hole, and
it's a missed green, but
it's
really
a missed green, but you know, it's better than being 40, 45 feet from, yeah, front edge just on, isn't it?
Yeah, so, of course.
And then then that skews your putting stats, doesn't it?
Yes, of course. Because
if you two put, it goes down as a one put.
Yeah.
But, you know, was it a better two put from 45 feet away? Or so I pay a little bit of attention to them. I look at the strokes gained on certain things at the end of the week, just because that's a good indication of how you played, or you know, how your putting's been. But yeah, I don't go into it into the depth that some of the lads that go into it. I've always played golf on feel a lot, and I know which parts of my game are letting me down. That's the way I've always felt like I've swung the golf club as well. You know, I've always looked at it on, I mean, I don't know who doesn't, but I've always looked at it on video camera and thought, I don't like the way I'm swinging it there, or you know, that looks wrong, or I need to work on that. I've never looked at it and thought, oh yeah, that's perfect. I guess that sums golf up, doesn't it?
Well, I think everyone's also hypercritical of themselves and their techniques, yeah, a lot of the time as well. Do you feel like you've got a really strong kind of like golf knowledge, like technique knowledge?
Of my own swing, yes. I'm not very good at giving lessons.
Really?
I'm not very good at looking at somebody and saying, oh yeah, he's doing that. Or, you know, I'll stand behind, say, Pete Cowan or somebody like that that I've been having lessons with, and they'll see two swings and go, oh yeah, well, it needs to do that, and that, and I'll be like, has he seen that? Well, that looks all right to me. And their knowledge of, in general, and of you know, the eye for being able to see stuff is incredible, whereas I really only know about my own swing and what makes me play well, which has been an advantage over the years, because you know, if I've got a two-shot lead in a final round of a tournament and I go out and I play the first 5-6 holes poorly, I feel like I'm swinging it, I can fix myself.
That's, yeah, good. Do you ever teach your kids?
I teach Sam a little bit, but I've sent him to somebody else. He's lads and dads, isn't it? He's not going to listen to me.
1,000,000%.
So
is it frustrating?
He does listen to me a little bit more. I'll send him away for a lesson and I'll go, what did you tell you? Oh, you tell me what you tell me. I'll say, great, it's cost me 100 quid for you to listen to somebody say what I said.
Do you remember? I was number one in the bloody world.
Yeah.
Listen to me.
Yeah, don't listen to me. What would I know?
Yeah. Does it frustrate you that?
No. I never listened to my dad as much as I should have done. So.
Has he got any kind of potential? Is he showing good potential?
Yeah, he's a pretty good player, yeah. Yeah, he's sort of plus one, plus two.
Nice.
But he started late, so he's just playing catch-up and he needs to play more tournaments. His course management and the way he thinks his way around a golf course is poor at the moment.
He's still caddy for you every now and again, Sam, as well.
Yeah, now and again, yeah.
Has that helped him learn your traits, your course management, to help him in his own game, would you say?
Yeah, I'm sure he picks up stuff from watching me, and yeah, maybe caddy for me at the Ryder Cup, and you know, it's good for me because I tend to talk him through stuff.
Yeah.
So it kind of reinforces what I'm trying to do in my own mind, because I'm like kind of giving him a lesson.
So you quite verbally,
yeah, and when I am giving him a lesson, I sort of, he's got a lot of he's watched me, so he's got a lot of the faults that I've got. He swings it quite similar,
yeah,
so if I'm giving him a lesson, when I go out and hit balls later on, I start to hit it better because I'm thinking about the right things, about what I've told him,
of course,
and they apply to me. So you know, it's golf's strange like that.
And obviously, you're in a very unique situation where you have Helen on the bag.
Mm.
Is that, most of the time, is that? Would you say that's
80-90%
of the time Helen's on the bag?
Yeah, I would say so, yeah. She's not caddying next week at the British Masters, but she's doing the two after that, the Byron Nelson and the PGA.
And
funny story about the PGA last year.
Go on.
We were going around Kira Island, and she's obviously not a golfer. She only started caddying for me a few years ago.
Does she play at all, by the way?
She swings it all right, and she can hit it quite good, but she's just not got time. Player,
yeah.
Yeah. So we're at the PGA at Kira Island, and gets to, I think it was Thursday afternoon, and she's looking around, and she's like, "Can I tell you something?" She goes, I go, "Yeah, yeah." She says, "I'm looking on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and I thought, Westy's here a bit early. He don't normally turn up to tournaments on Tuesday, and there's a lot of people here." So I had a look online last night, and this is a major championship, you know, this the PGA. She had no idea the PGA was a major. We were playing Thursday afternoon or whenever it
oh
was.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, she'd only figured out the night before that it was a major championship. I thought, what a great way to view the game of golf.
Yes.
And do you think that's really helped you? Like,
she doesn't rub off on me,
big it up.
Yeah, no. She says, "Come on, let's go for another walk around a big green field."
Really?
Which is what it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
And hit it, find it, hit it again.
Really? And she just literally, she doesn't give you, I'm guessing, yardages, you do all your own yardages.
Sometimes she tries to get involved and she'll look at me and she'll go, five. I'll go, nearly. It's a seven.
So it's like that time when I caddied for you. That's crazy.
Do you think when you're newer in your career, you benefit from having a professional caddy? And obviously you're at the point now where you've done this obviously enough times, you know what you're doing.
Yeah, like I said earlier, it's my 20, well, it depends who you listen to, but it's my 2019 there.
33rd season or something.
And you know, I've had lots of great caddies and I've learnt off them, and I feel like it's more important for me now to make my own decisions and be completely clear in my own mind than have somebody else telling me how they see a shot or something like that. Now, a kid coming on tour who's learning the ropes, and like Sam, if Sam was to start, then I would suggest that he get a good caddy straight away that could, you know, improve his game management, that had seen the way other people, like, say, like a Billy Foster, for example. If Sam had Billy Foster, you know, his course management of a golf course is brilliant, and he's learnt from Seve and Sergio Garcia and me and Darren and people like that. And he could impart that knowledge. But, you know, I'm old now and I've got all that knowledge, so it's more important for me to go out there. Even if I make the wrong decision out there, it's important for me to be 100% committed to that decision.
Yeah.
And it be my decision, even if it's the wrong one, as opposed to being 50% committed to what might be the right decision.
Yeah.
So that's the way I'm viewing golf now.
Do you think, let's say in a 5 years' time, Sam makes it, he's out on tour, he's playing in this PGA event or something, you know, major, would you caddy for him?
He couldn't afford me. I caddied for him once down at Wheatley in an amateur tournament, just one round, and he brought the carry bag, and after about 15 holes, I was absolutely knackered, and I thought, oh, God, I don't know how the caddies do this. I could never do this.
Really? Yeah. That's so funny.
And then I'd driven him down there, and then I drove him back. I slept so well that night.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, because it is hard graft, isn't it, being a caddy?
I've just picked it up this morning and put it in my car boot, and I'm like, Jesus, I'm glad I don't have to carry this.
Oh, my goodness. That is great. Right, we've asked about the highlights. A more tough question. What would you say the lowest part of your career has been? The low, you know?
Yeah, I had a slump in about 2001, 2002. When I won it was weird because I won the Order of Merit in 2000, and towards the end of 2000, I was being coached by Pete, and I said to Pete, my swing don't feel right. I can feel like something's wrong. I'm not going through the right positions. I felt like I swung it fantastic on my best in, say, 98 and 99. And then in 2000, I sort of won the money list on confidence. You know, a bit like Scottie Scheffler's playing on confidence now. I was played on confidence in 2000, won the Order of Merit, but, you know, just felt like there was something wrong. And then I took a big break going into 2001. and kind of lost my timing and lost that confidence, and then couldn't really get it back. And it took me a couple of years, and
wow,
you know, just taking responsibility for my own game and my own golf swing more to get it back, really, rather than listening to too many people. I did like all people do and went and got too many opinions. And
yeah.
Then, you know, your brain gets cluttered, and that's just not the way to play golf, because there's more to it than just swinging it perfectly.
Did you ever in that period of time, like, really consider this isn't going to work out?
Yeah, I thought about jacking it in a couple of times, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just not me, though.
I was going to say, how'd you get through those times?
That's why I'm still hanging around like a bad smell now. And, you know, 29 years later, you know, I just don't have any give up in me.
And where did you feel like that came from? Do you reckon that was instilled from your parents?
Yeah, I guess brought up properly. You know, not works up in the 80s, you know, miners strikes and stuff like that happening in the early 80s wasn't the best. It, you know, don't get me wrong, I had a great childhood and I was brought up properly, but, you know, it's not the greatest place to, you know, be brought up. It had its troubles and you know, you just... They're instilled in you, aren't they, from like your friends and the community that you come from. And, you know, that's never really left me. I've always felt, you know, lucky to be doing something that I love, because I know, you know, talking to my careers officer at 16 years of age, I was given the option of the sandwich factory or the bachelor peas factory. And,
wow,
you know, golf's a much better option than those two.
Exactly. And did you at that point, I know we've just been through this, at 16... Did you have that goal to become a professional golfer at that point, do you feel?
Yeah, at some level, yeah. Yeah. I didn't know what level it was going to be, but I knew that I wanted to be involved in golf at some level.
Do you think now more modern players have still got that grit, that deep, ingrained, hard work grit that players from your era or the era before had that made them so successful?
Yeah, I do. Certain ones.
Yeah.
I think a lot of them are almost too groomed, you know, as maybe college players, or, you know, they're looked after too well.
Yeah.
You know, they're given too much too early.
Like perfect practice facilities,
yeah.
Perfect equipment, yeah. Straight away, the best coaching straight away.
Yeah, that's a knock-on effect of Tiger, isn't it? You know, and that's why there are so many good players that swing it technically so good now, because they're getting coached better, they've got nutritionalists, so they're eating better, they're working out better. You know, when I came on tour, we didn't really go in the gym that much and, you know about foods and...
Yeah, there'd have been no physio truck, yeah, and no, at events, I guess.
That came on tour about 10 years, I guess, after I started.
Yeah, there'd have been no, like, mobile gyms and things like that.
We weren't taking trainers around with us and psychologists and stuff like that, so... Golf's been broken down, and every little aspect of it's been fine-tuned for all the players. So, you know, you see the grittiest ones, they're the ones that win more often.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think you only find that grit and that determination, obviously, when it's not going well. Like when you mentioned you're going through that low point, that's when you figure out your grit.
Yeah, you do. You find out more about yourself when you're playing badly than when you're playing well. You don't get me wrong, you do learn about yourself when you're playing well, but you learn about more important things when you're playing badly.
If you're
going back to the gritty thing, you see the grittiest ones win tournaments when they're not playing well.
Yeah. You definitely see that.
Yeah.
They can just grind it out.
Yeah,
can't
like
they?
Jordan Spieth.
Yes.
A couple of weeks ago. He's a gritty player.
Yeah.
You know, you know, he's somebody that you wouldn't want to play in match play.
He must be in. Have you played him in match play, guys?
Yeah, I beat him one up.
There you go.
When you watch him.
I wondered why you were bringing that story up.
He's so gritty. He's so gritty, but yeah, I beat him.
Is he just like... I bet he's a pain in the arse to play against, isn't he?
Yeah, anybody like that that you know is not going to give up, like a Poulter or...
Yeah.
Trying to think of somebody else. Well, lots of the people I've played in my career, I played Jeff Maggott in my first Ryder Cup. Scott Verplank. Yeah. People like that, Tom Lehman in Boston, just horrible to play. They're never going to give up. You know, yeah. They're gritty, almost dirty players.
Yeah, you know, as dirty as you can be.
Like they're almost like that Dennis Wise, like midfield character that's going to go down the back of your leg.
Yeah,
you know,
like a Roy Keane type.
Yeah, Roy Keane, yeah. Yeah, you can't talk about Roy Keane like Forest player, obviously. Your class.
Well, he's fallen out of love with my team, certainly. obviously, we touched on match play a little bit there. What's your favourite Ryder Cup memory?
The final day in Chicago, when we came from so many points behind. For me, it'll never get any better than that, I don't think.
It was phenomenal.
Yeah. Emotional, you'd have to say, K Club in...
with Darren Clark.
With Darren, yeah. Walking on the first tee there. I think we were all in tears, all welled up. But they were all special. You know, even the ones you lose, you're on the wrong end of, you know, you still take great memories from.
Yeah. I believe the parties, even if they lose, are still better.
Unfortunately, I can't remember any of the parties. I can remember going to them, but I can never remember leaving them.
Do you find that once you've been in a Ryder Cup with, you know, obviously players that then for years later on tour, you have a better bond with those players and a better relationship?
Yeah. You know, without the Ryder Cup, I wouldn't have got to know Sergio as well as I have, or, you know, Luke Donald. And then, you know, in later times, it's nice to have, you know, played with people like Jamie Donaldson and, you know, shared those experiences with people like him and Martin Keimer and Søren Hansen, I partnered.
So. Who's your dream? Who's been your dream partner? If let's say the Ryder Cup is tomorrow, and you could partner anybody that you've partnered with in the past, who would you pick?
It'd be a tough one. It'd be a toss up between Clarke or Sergio, I think.
And is that because of your games of style suit, or because personalities suit?
It's personalities and games with Darren, and I think Sergio's one of the best ball strikers and drivers of the golf ball to ever play the game.
Is well, it's ridiculous, isn't it?
And he's got that gritty,
never gives up.
Yeah,
if you could partner in a made up world, and if you could partner with a American player, who would it be?
Well, even though he's not got the greatest of records, it'd be Tiger,
yeah.
But you know, that's I mean, who wouldn't?
I feel like you
pretty and, good, isn't he?
He's pretty decent. He's all right, yeah. I feel like you and Spieth would be a tough match if people
Jordan
playing
would be
against
good to
you,
play with, yeah. Yeah, anybody that can make them 10-footers when they need them is a good partner in Ryder Cup.
Exactly.
You know, when you talk about these players and obviously being great players and good players, like obviously you're an amazing golfer and you absolutely strike the golf ball so pure, as a lot of these guys clearly do. How often do you walk down the range at an event and see someone and think, he hits it different? Is there many of those guys out there that are almost just other level of just striking, or is that just not happen when you're on tour?
No, I'll walk up and down the range and there's the odd player that I'll stand and watch. You can hear the sound, can't you? You know, you'll walk down the range and you'll hear a sound and you think, yeah, he's a flusher.
Really?
So I'll stand and watch.
Someone like Rory, maybe, or...
Rory.
Give us like a top five of, like, flushers.
Flushers. Well, I mean, there's guys that you wouldn't immediately put into your top, you know, you wouldn't think, but, you know, I'd walk down a range and say Angel Cabrera in his heyday, and another Argentinian, Eduardo Romero. You know, my early days of being on tour, Howard Clark, Barry Lane, people like that, that really compressed the ball.
Right.
Well.
And did you ever, like, strive to get that to that level? Did you ever pick their brains and go, how are they doing that? Or did you ever speak to Pete Cowan and go, I want to hit it like those guys? Can I be a flusher?
Not really, because I hit it like that. You know, I've always been a good striker with a golf ball. So.
Do you think people would put you in their flusher category?
Yeah, probably.
Good. Yeah, that's class.
Yeah.
What is it then? Is it that, like you said, that compression? Because I've heard it before, that different noise when you see an elite golfer. Yeah. Like today, we're lucky. We're going to see you hit some shots today. Like,
well, it might not be there.
Rick might have a little chance.
But still, sound very different to the way I hit it.
Is it because obviously you're fast, but there's amateurs who will be fast. Is it just that compression, the angle
fast
of attack?
At the right time, yeah. Right. The right angle of attack, yeah.
Yeah.
And just
see all them guys
that
you see all them guys that I mentioned, they're like long irons, brilliant.
Right.
That's really
the telltale
the acid
sign.
Set test, yeah. Yeah.
And then you mentioned obviously Spieth, but who would you say has had the, without probably the obvious names, but like who's got the best short game? Who's like short game you ever seen? I'm like, bloody hell, if I had that short game, I would have done X in my career.
Oh, Phil's got a great short game. Tiger's got an unbelievable short game. Jason Day a few years ago when he got to world number one. I played with him, played some incredible chip shots. You know, Brett Rumford, unbelievable bunker player.
Do you ever get, and it's just a kind of side question, do you ever get like some of these players who, let's say Jason Day, who has obviously got to world number one, he was killing it, he's kind of struggled a little bit now. Do they ever kind of ring you up or lean on you for any advice, like words of wisdom?
I don't give my number out like that. That's why it took you 128 episodes.
You got better memory on numbers than I have anyway. I even have to check what episode number up to.
Danny Willett's got an unbelievable short game.
Yeah.
Unbelievable short game, yeah.
Do you feel that you're in a position now, or have you been in the position where you'd almost be more like a mentor to some of young players coming up?
Yeah, I suppose I would now, yeah. Yeah.
Or have you resisted before this point, or?
No, I've always been open, you know, with people walking up and down the range. A lot of people ask me stuff, and, you know, I volunteer the information.
What kind of stuff, like swing things or just general advice?
Yeah,
or
yeah, it might be scheduling or, you know, golf coaches who go and see, or, you know. A lot of the young kids do come up to me now and, you know, ask me my opinion on certain
things. How much do you want to give them, though? Because you're still so competitive. Do you not feel like...
I've got confidence in myself that I can tell them.
Yeah.
Do you think that's taken...
I'll be honest with them, yeah.
Has that taken time to get to that point?
Yeah, I think it does, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want to give too much away.
Of course. Is there any, like, up-and-coming stars that you've seen that maybe are not on the radar that you think, oh, my God, they've got ridiculous potential?
They are on the radar, really. The Højgaard twins, you know, I'll walk down the range and probably pronounce that wrong, but anyway. Rasmus and Nikolai,
oh, yeah.
Call them. And, you know, I stand and watch them hit balls. And it's just a matter of time before they...
go big time.
Yeah, they'll break out and they'll go and play in America or wherever. Probably America. And then their game will come on leaps and bounds because they've turned pro young and started on the European Tour. And they've got a bit more of a foundation than... some of the kids that will come out of college.
Yeah. Because, do you reckon that again because of it's not been as pampered for them as such? They've had to go through that little bit of grit.
Yeah, I just think you have to grow up quicker if you're playing the European Tour. There's more experiences and challenges thrown your way.
Yeah, more travel. You've got to plan a lot more things.
Yeah, they're doing it all for you if you come out of college.
Yeah.
You're in a team.
Exactly. Yeah, it certainly does feel that way. Like when... and I don't know whether that's just because of America and everything's done so kind of corporately and they do hospitality so great. It's like I say, it's always that pathway. But I feel like when even Brooks Koepka came over to Europe, didn't he, in the European Tour for a long time, and he talked about his experiences going through that, how it taught him so much.
Made him a gritty player, you know, like we were talking about early on. Good under pressure.
Now, again, I feel like I'm going to get the stat wrong, but you've won five times on five different continents.
Well done so far.
do you feel like, do you have to change your game a lot to win on all these different types of golf courses, or do you just stick with what you've got? Do you have to make many adaptations?
You always have to adapt to your surroundings and environment you're playing in.
And what made you good at that?
Playing in a lot of different places.
Right, yeah.
Traveling. I think I've won in 19 different countries, which is eight more than like the next best, which is Ernie and Gary Player. So you just have to be able to adapt, not that much, but certainly, you know, putting at Augusta is different to putting here at Close House. Putting at these two places is different to going and putting at Saujana in Kuala Lumpur, with grainy greens.
It'll be different at the Open Championship at St. Andrews.
Yeah. Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites.
So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Playing at St Andrews at sea level, heavy, windy, is different than playing in Colorado or Johannesburg.
Yeah.
It's in air, ball going a mile.
And you only get that through experience, don't you?
Yeah.
You can't just go to these places and just expect to know it, can you?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, it's that's the value of being experienced, or the value of having a good caddy.
Yeah.
An experienced caddy, like we were talking about earlier on.
Yeah, because if the player's not done it, at least the caddy, you'd like to think, has done it.
Talk them through
and
it,
and continued.
Yeah.
You forget there's so much difference, though. In my head, I just think there's like Parkland course and Lynxes.
I do. I was thinking the same.
But you think, saying like... the altitude, yeah. The grain,
the weather,
there's a lot.
The thickness
heat.
Of the air,
yeah, the heat, yeah. Yeah. Is that even that? If you're playing in obviously very hot weather and you're walking 4 or 5 miles a day, 4 days, 5 days in a row, even that can take its toll.
Yeah, that's why we're all finely tuned athletes like this.
But you, in all seriousness, you'd put a lot into your workouts, into your health, don't you? Like, I've seen you smashing the Peloton. Are you still Pelotoning a lot?
Yeah.
And CrossFit.
I have to do that more than it balls now. You know, because at 49, you know, your body doesn't behave like it did at 27, and you have to adapt your training and, you know, your approach to the game.
Yeah.
Reinvent yourself, really.
Do you feel or wish, if you could rewind, would you have started it earlier? Like, would you have, if you could have grown up being this kind of like gym goer, do you think that would have massively helped you in your game of golf?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I would suggest that anybody coming out, for a few different reasons really, but I would suggest anybody coming out now, you know, starts working out and looking after the body as early as possible. You see a lot of kids starting younger than I started. So I started at 13, let's say. You see a lot of kids having a golf club put in their hand at 5 years of age.
Big time.
And golf, you're doing the same movement over and over again, and you're seeing them get injuries because the body's not developed. You know, like we were talking about, I played football and rugby and cricket and swam and ran a lot. So my body developed to a certain extent as I was growing up and got balanced and strong in all the right areas. Some kids come out and they're not doing anything else. You know, the parents are maybe a bit overbearing and Tiger's their hero, and they stick a club in their hand at 6 years of age and they think they're going to be the next Tiger Woods. And at 16, they've got a back injury because they've just been doing the same thing over and over again, not doing the gym work, just been sent out onto a range to hit balls and, you know, have a lesson.
And also probably falling out of love with it a bit.
Yeah, you see them, you can see them at 17, 18, you know, hating the game.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
They've been pushed into it not so much. However, I feel like, obviously, through your incredible career, 27 years.
Nine.
29. You've not really been injured through that kind of time frame, but like you look at now modern players like a Bryson DeChambeau, obviously out on injury, like, and he's pushed himself.
He took it to the extreme, hasn't he, though, with the strength? And
I think there's a little bit of luck involved there with injuries. I tore my calf muscle in 2010. It was out for a few weeks. But other than that, I haven't really had too many injuries. Started to feel, you know, my lower back a couple of years ago, 3 years ago. Sometimes it's as I get heavier, you know, carrying a bit more weight gives me a bad back. So I have to monitor, you know, what I weigh. But embarked on a bit of a stretching regime 2 or 3 years ago, and I don't have any issues with that now. But, you know, that's 15, 20 minutes, five times a week.
Do you think modern players are going to have short careers? Do you think they're going to earn more, almost more like smash and grabs a bit more?
Possibly. I think, you know, it'll be different things for different players.
But I'm just thinking from like a longevity standpoint. Like, do you think that the way that these golfers now are putting themselves through these kind of rigmaroles, do you think that they're going to last 29-year careers?
Well, I assume you're thinking just about Bryson.
Just...
But I suppose Jason Day used to go at like 110%.
Yeah, Bryson's been...
back issues and stuff like that.
He's like the high-profile one, but there's also a lot coming through the ranks. Yeah. Like, you think, are they going to be able to keep this up for long periods of time?
Well, golf's not a tippy-tappy game anymore, is it?
No.
You know, you've got to hit it a long way, try and overpower golf courses. That's just the way they're designing golf courses and the way people start to see the game now, don't they? So that could encourage people to go at it harder and more injuries. Unless they start working out and treating their bodies appropriately, you know, and putting the foundations in there to be able to swing it at those kind of speeds.
When you were having those kind of duels with Bryson, like Bay Hill and things like that, did you think at that point, God, I'm a long way behind this guy? Or did you, obviously you were still competing and still in the final day together, like did it still feel like you could play?
Well, that's the great thing about golf, isn't it? I don't have to play him at his game.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of different ways to win golf tournaments. He's 26 or 7 or whatever, and I'm 48, 49. So, you know, I'm not going to hit as far as him. Nobody does.
Yeah.
So you have to find another way to get around the golf course in one less than him. Exactly. Unfortunately, I didn't quite manage it at Bay Hill, but I did manage it the following week at the Players. So,
exactly.
That for me is the interesting thing about golf. There's all of a sudden there's a Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah.
All of a sudden there's a Bryson DeChambeau. All of a sudden there's somebody that's maybe a little bit shorter.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no one way, is there?
No.
There's no one way to shoot a 65 four times or whatever.
Keeps it interesting, doesn't it?
Exactly. 100%. We've got quick fire questions, don't we?
And we've kind of got more at the end now, but the kind of quick fire questions, either or answers. But if you want to elaborate, feel free. So number one, 9 holes or the driving range?
Well, it depends.
Quick fire. You've got 2 hours to spare.
What do you enjoy more?
Driving range.
Do you enjoy the driving range more or 9 holes?
Yeah, driving range.
First app you open in the morning on your phone?
Quick fire.
Sorry.
No, I like that. I want to make sure it gets the right answer. Twitter, WhatsApp.
Alarm clock. turn it off.
Do you get up quite? Are you quite an early bird?
Yeah. As I've got older, I've slept less, which I hate about myself. Because I used to call me half man, half mattress. I used to like sleep the clock round. And as I've got older, I've turned into my dad, her parents. You know, getting up early.
And what time is that? Like a 6 o'clock? Is that earlier than that?
Yeah, whatever time the light starts pouring through the curtains. Yeah.
Oh, really? And then,
are you
up? Are you working out? Are you chilling out? Are you having a coffee?
Or you're
breakfast?
Scrolling like we end up doing?
I'll spend like everybody else 15, 20 minutes looking through Instagram or something like that. Whatever you put on, obviously.
Obviously, thank you.
128 podcasts to listen to.
Yeah, to hide. God, get rid of that.
Yeah. I've been jet lagged for 29 years, which, makes sleeping awkward.
Yeah, imagine. I bet.
Yeah.
I bet. There's not many times, like, you know, you've slept in a lot of different bloody beds around the world. Yeah. Like, you know, it's hard. Yeah. I bet it's nice just to be at home, and I bet you wish you could lie until 11 o'clock, whatever.
I said that to somebody yesterday. They said, oh, you must have seen a lot of the world. I said, I've seen a lot of airports, golf courses and hotels around the world, but I haven't actually seen a lot of the world.
Do you wish you had done a bit more?
Yeah, I wish you'd done that more, yeah.
It would be nice to be able to go a few days early and, you know, take in the sights, but
it's not doable, is it?
When you're playing 30 tournaments a year, you know, it's about... Private jets have been the biggest luxury in my life. They've afforded me so much time to do other stuff. You know, sometimes flying around in a private jet saves you a day a week when you think about, having to leave on a Monday instead of, or you know, a jet. So, you know, when I was playing a lot in Europe, and I was flying, I would turn up to a tournament on a Wednesday morning, play the pro-am in the Wednesday afternoon as a practice round. Whereas, you know, if I didn't have that luxury, I'd be going on a Monday and then having a practice round on a Tuesday, and sometimes not getting back on a Sunday night if I've played really well, miss the flight home. But if you've got a NetJets contract like I have, you know, I can get out.
This is a question I've always
wanted. That's been the biggest luxury in my life.
This is a question I've always wanted to know, right? You're flying to, I'm trying to think, New York, okay? From wherever, Newcastle or wherever. What is actually faster, a commercial flight or a private jet?
Oh, I would never fly private that far.
Can it not go that far?
Can it go across? Yeah, but it's just too expensive.
Really?
Yeah.
So this is more.
I would fly Newcastle to Heathrow and then Heathrow JFK.
Right, okay. If,
and yes, I do take my own golf clubs with me as well. That's how I get them there.
if you did have, and again, I'm just more curious because I don't fly private jet. I don't know if you know this. If you were to fly commercial or private from Newcastle to New York, which plane would win? Are private jets fast? That's what I'm trying to work out.
Yeah, they're quick. Yeah,
there you go, Rick. That's your answer.
I've got fly the same speed as. The jets fly the same speed as.
You must
other
save
player.
Time with all the checking in you and all change, that kind
yeah,
of stuff.
Yeah, you can you fly just, when you want.
Yeah.
So, you know, and they've never lost my golf clubs. They're putting them in the thing at old right behind you, you know they're going on.
Yeah, and they're not going to get damaged. They're not going to get chucked about.
Yeah.
The next question I've got is actually, I might tweak it. It was going to be, what's your favourite to play in, the Open or the Masters? Well, maybe still have that, but is there any other events on tour that it's just your, for whatever reason, just love playing?
The Masters is my favourite tournament to play in. The one I'd like to win the most is the Open. Mm. There's a lot goes on the week of the Open that, as a British player, that you could do without. The Masters, you don't get it.
Do you feel more pressure when you're playing the Open?
Tiger and people like that take the flak those weeks and take all the pressure off you.
Do you feel more pressure is applied in the Open?
You just want to play well in front of your home fans. You know, I've always enjoyed, love playing in England and Britain, so there's a little bit more pressure wanting to please them.
Yeah, do you get better reception? Let's say you're on the first tee at the Masters, they announce your name. Obviously, crowds cheer. Is it bigger? Is it more enthusiastic when it's at places like the Open?
No, I don't think so. I've always had a good reception anywhere I've gone and played, and having been out there for so long, people have followed me for nearly 30 years now, so they've. I've grown up in front of their eyes, you know. I've gone from being 19 to 49, so they feel like they know me really well.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
You know, you kind of gain an affinity with the golf fans because you know, it's some of them are new ones, but a lot of them are people that watched it in their 20s and now watch it in their 50s, aren't they?
And they respect you. They respect what you've done.
When you play in the pro-ams and stuff, which I'm guessing obviously you still do, what's the single biggest thing you see amateurs do wrong?
Well, their game management is poor, but their game management is only poor because they don't hit it consistently. So, you know, they'll not hit enough club a lot of the time.
Makes sense.
The best question that I always get asked in pro-ams is, what club do you think I should hit? I said, well, how far have you got? 170 yards. I said, well, what do you hit 170 yards? Anything from a 3-iron to an 8-iron.
Well, how are you going to know?
So how am I going to know what you should hit?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, and are you planning on thinning this one?
Fatten it like you did on the last? Or?
Yeah, that's a tough question.
Should definitely club up if you're going to hit fast like you did on the last.
But then they'll thin it, it'll go through the back.
Yeah.
And you'll get the blame.
Yeah. I knew I should have hit 9-iron. You'll get that one. Should have hit 9-iron then.
This is one I'm dying to know. I'm a bit of a golf equipment nerd. What's the favourite club you've ever owned? But maybe let's almost, if you've got time, like driver, irons and putter. Like, have you got a favourite, like Ping G10, for example, was a beast. Like,
yeah, I used that for years, didn't I? I used to infuriate Ping because they'd be on like G20 and I'd still be using a G10. And
so
like,
good, that driver.
Can you please use something up to date, some up to date equipment? And I was like, I really love the G10. Yeah. Eventually, Billy was caddying for me at the time, and he said to me, they're going to have to wrestle this thing out of my hands for you to put anything else in your golf bag.
He was as passionate that way as well.
So that's one that kind of.
And you still have it?
Yeah, I've got it somewhere, I think.
such a nice head still. I was looking, we were in an Octolone second-hand shop, St. Andrews, and they had one, because I used to use that driver. It's weird, cause it's still a 460, but it looks quite small.
Yeah.
But it's such a nice profile.
I think the newest ones they're making now look a bit more like that, obviously with modern technology and materials, a bit probably more modern materials being used, and shafts have improved, haven't they, shaft technology, even in the last 12 years or whatever it's been. But that's, I'm not a massive fan of the big flat-headed drivers that look like a frying pan on the end of the club.
Yeah,
I like something that looks a bit deep-faced and chunky behind it.
Are you into the tech of the clubs, or do you just hit one? Yeah, that feels good.
Can you not tell the way I've just described the driver there? Flat like a frying pan and deep-faced and chunky.
That's for the new pink marketing for next year. It's not flat like a frying pan.
Yeah. You just give it to me and I hit it, and if it goes straight and a long way, then I like it.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you reckon, do you have much influence with, like, the engineers and stuff? Do you ever get a chance to...
I do on putters a little bit, yeah. Yeah, I like talking to the guys in the putter lab design stuff, you know, the new stuff that Ping have brought out. I like talking to them about, well, you know, what they're thinking and the thoughts behind, because that changes all the time.
Yeah, big time.
It's another thing that's been analysed to the nth degree, isn't it?
Do you tinker with your putter quite a bit?
I used to change putters a lot, but I've been using this fetch.
Yeah, with that was in the hole you put it in to get the ball out.
Yeah.
Did you ever do that with it when you were practicing?
I did it when I won in Abu Dhabi.
That's so cool.
I was going to do it. Where was it? I was going to do it somewhere else, but I was in the second last group. I thought I'll only do it if I'm in the last group.
If you're in the final group.
In case I damage the hole, which I didn't damage the hole, but I said to the guys, if I win Marty, I think it was in Phoenix, I said, if I win tomorrow, I said, I'll pick it out there with the putter. And he's like, oh, you go, please do. So cool. You know,
make sure there's a video camera. Make sure there's a camera around.
I did. I tapped it in from about that far to win by a couple and went like that and held my arms in the air.
Nice.
I told you I'd do it.
There's my new contract.
Yeah, it's quite weird. Ping are obviously so well known, like the Anza family, the Anza shape, and that's been so revolutionary. But equally, they've had some crazy designs, the actual crazy.
Yeah.
Did you remember the Dock 17 that was 17 centimetres? Yeah.
Huge.
And then obviously the Fetch. They have kind of pushed the boundary with different innovations.
I've won with nearly all of them.
Crazy was the crazy.
If you ever get to go in the vault at Ping. Yeah, there's a bit.
I've been in.
And they make a gold one.
Yeah, you get gold on for every time you win, don't you?
I've got a wall, haven't I?
Yeah, yeah. A side.
That's when you've made it and you've got your own wall.
The side of the vault.
I think I've got about 60 odd in there.
That's
you
crazy.
You get them for Ryder Cups. And I used to give them out for career money and stuff like that.
Have you always been Ping then all your career?
Yeah. Yes. I had my first set of clubs when I was 14. I bought a set, or my mum and dad bought me a set of I2s. And I won the county championship. And Ping found out that, you know, I played Ping, and they said, do you want to come down and we'll give you a set and, you know, we'll spec them all out for you. And
wow.
So, yeah, I've been about 14 years of age, so I've played for nearly 35 years now. And I've been with Titleist for about the same...
like 48 years or something. Yeah.
And I've been with Titleist for about the same amount of time.
With the ball.
They started giving me golf balls when I was about 16, yeah.
What was the ball then? The Tor Ballata, or was it?
It was gutta percha or something like that. it would have been Tor Ballata, I think, and then it went to...
Professional after that, I think.
Yeah.
It was also Tor Prestige.
Dad, you are a golfer.
I am a bit. The reason I know about those balls, because as a junior, I wasn't that good at golf. I used to love a backspin comp.
Oh,
I
used to
keep a Tor Ballata.
You'd have loved the Tor Edition.
That's
the ball that you should have played. Spalding Tor Editions.
It's like a squash ball. I've heard of those.
Remember Greg Norman used it? It cost him about 8 majors.
Oh, my word.
We'll just spin it off like golf, off of greens.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I used to love soft golf balls. Yeah.
What do you do with all the... It's probably the most often question I get asked. What do I do with all the golf clubs I test and stuff? What do you do with all your golf clubs?
I give them away. I sign them. I sent a load to South Africa for people down there to use.
That's amazing. There's a few
charity.
A few in the clubhouse here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you ever keep any... Is there any ones that you just wouldn't ever give away, though? I'm guessing
not
you've
really.
Got that G10 somewhere. Is there any
It'd be in the garage.
Is like a set that you've won with that you're like, I need to keep that set, or...
Not really, no.
You're not that kind of precious with the clubs?
No.
It's interesting. No.
Right, we've got a couple
There's
more
ones on walls everywhere, aren't there? You know, like, there's one at Wentworth for winning the World Match Play.
Yeah.
At Derby. Somebody took a picture the other day and I thought, I wondered where that putter had gone.
I've been looking
for
that.
I gave it to them.
What about like golf bags and stuff? I mean, we've been here for like...
There's a lot here.
I mean, that's not mine. That's Alan's. But yeah,
there's one just in that side.
Mine are all changed, turned into lamps and
they're all chained to the wall
and things
as well.
Like that. Yeah,
I went to move that one before, and it's literally chained to the
wall. That one before into his car boot.
But do you have many at home still? Many like, is there any golf? I feel like you're so like blasé about the equipment. There's no like really precious Ryder Cup bags that you've had or that you've still got at home.
I turn them into stuff like this, and there's a lot here, and there's a lot up at the academy that, you know, other people can enjoy looking at.
No way.
I've got the memories, and I don't need a golf bag.
Well, Jonathan showed me the, which one was it, 97 Ryder Cup one?
Yeah.
And there was a Faldo ball still in it or something.
Was it?
A precept or a Bridgestone or something.
When you partner Faldo, that's quite
really
cool.
That's really cool.
I didn't know that.
It's on eBay.
Just stick that on eBay.
It was. It's ready for you to sign it.
Couple more questions on here then. They are, again, quick ones. How do you like your steak cooked?
Pittsburgh medium.
What's a Pittsburgh medium?
Charred on the outside and medium on the in.
Okay, that works for me. I get mine well done, which gets frowned upon, but it's how I like it, so don't judge.
Have it how you like it.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, yeah. Lee. Yeah, cheers, mate. So next time I go to the restaurant, the woman pulls her face. Well, actually, Lee
Westwood.
You're
heathen.
He's been on tour for 29 years.
36 years he's been on tour for.
Okay, two more. Most underrated golfer in your career? Someone that's been out there that just doesn't maybe get the media hype or hasn't won as much as they should, or just someone that's just class but maybe not a household name.
Everybody gets the hype now, don't they, in the coverage.
Maybe before the internet era then. It was like when you said before Barry Lane, like he's obviously a big name, yeah. But I don't think you hear about it. Didn't have that.
Howard Clark, people like that. Mark James.
Yeah, Mark James. These kind of come into the... Were they kind of more come to the end of
Ryder Cup players though,
were,
weren't they? So yeah. They did get the media accolades and stuff like that, if you want to call it that. But
guy set up a VJ Singh appreciation
group.
Yeah,
I loved VJ.
Yeah, VJ. Great story about not VJ, but Dave Rennick that caddied for VJ, and he caddied for me in the years that I was struggling. And great bloke. Unfortunately, passed away a few years ago. And he came to me when he was working for me, and I was really struggling. And he's like the top five in the world caddies, probably caddied for Lazabal when he won the Masters and stuff like that. And he came to me and he was like, Lee, he says, VJ wants me to go and work for him. He's offered me the job. He said, I said, Dave, if you don't take that job, I will. I'll go caddy for him. And he went off and caddied for him. He won about 10 events and went to world number one. And
it's like 2003, 2004 kind of time.
Yeah.
I remember that, Retief Goosen was really killing it as well around that time, I think, as well.
Yeah. Ernie would have been as well. VJ is the hardest worker I've ever...
I've heard. Was he big in the gym as well?
Before we all really started doing it seriously. Yeah, he would. But just the last one, first one on the range, the last one to leave it.
Still now, do you think, as
Cleveland
well?
Cleveland visor.
Yeah, he probably does it. I saw him at the Masters and he was...
shelling him.
Yeah. Digging holes.
That's madness. And when you say like, really, are we talking like hundreds and hundreds of shots in a practice session?
Yeah, he's renowned for it in thousands, I think.
My God.
Yeah, wear the range out. He used to go and practice at Sawgrass. The player, you know, down the bottom end there where the players are allowed, and he'd wear it out.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Well, I, for a video the other day, I hit 500 shots. It took me nearly 6 hours. My hands were absolutely killing. The next day, I felt like I had the worst jet lag ever. So never mind trying to do that.
Pulled a sickie the next day.
Multiple times.
Did you improve?
No, I good. Well,
tell him what the video was.
I tried to get a hole in one for 500 shots.
Right.
Rip off of like the European Tour video.
Any good? No?
Some
great shot.
But like the odds are like, obviously, I think
How many hole in ones have you had?
Only one. Have you? West Lancs, open qualifying, 17th hole.
I've lost count.
Genuinely,
honestly, double figures.
Yeah, 20 something.
20 something.
What? Please tell me you've kept some of the golf balls that you've had hole in ones with.
Joking.
Oh, for goodness sake.
You don't keep anything. Keep a manky old tight list. Just lob them away, don't you?
Do you lob them into the crowd?
Yeah.
When was the last one you had?
It means more to the person that, you know, than it does me.
When was the last one you had?
I had one on the 8th at Carnoustie.
Oh, yeah. The amazing shot tracer one.
Yeah.
Did you see that? He had like a drone.
I had one in the match play against Tua Latin a couple of years ago.
Oh my God.
Yeah, see Sergio hold it against me in the match play.
Yeah.
What a...
I felt there was quite a few on that. Was it that hole in the corner? Didn't Tommy have one or get close as well that year? There was quite a few.
I wasn't playing Tommy, so I don't care about that. Playing Sergio. Beat me on the fourth extra.
Ouch. Well, speaking of beating, my last question for you, Lee, was you're playing golf against Rick Shields.
Sorry, hang on a minute. Let me finish off. Where was your hole in one?
West Lancs.
West Lancs.
Yeah, 17th.
Club?
7-iron. It was actually about 192, but it's dead burnt out.
Downwind, eh?
Open qualifying. Finno, you know, Tommy's was watching at the side. And believe it or not, Lee, I've been doing YouTube for nearly 10 years now. There's not many shots I've hit that are not documented, that are not on video. Bar this bloody hole in one that's like, it's almost like hearsay. Like, did it actually happen? Luckily, it happened in an event at the Open Qualifying and there were spectators there. But out of all the things I've ever recorded, my only one wasn't recorded. Yeah, it was so annoying.
You had witnesses.
But, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you're playing against me today. Right. This is the final question.
And Rick's going to start off. You're starting level par, obviously, like a normal round of golf. Yeah. Rick's starting minus 10.
Will is it stroke play or
stroke
match play?
Stroke play.
And what's the question?
Will you beat him?
No.
Off the back tees.
I've got to say, I haven't had the most ideal preparation for this round of golf today.
You've had a birthday, weekend, and a wedding.
I've been to a wedding, which finished about 1 o'clock last night. So, it'll be close. I could probably get in his head.
Can you shoot better than if you can shoot better than 5 of a par on this golf course, which obviously you can, I think you've got a good chance. Yeah,
probably. He's probably intimidated playing me as well. Yeah. You know, having watched me on tour for 27 years.
He missed the first
36 years or something. Probably wasn't born.
We've got some quick fire questions from some of the fans. Nathan Hussein's asked, who would be your ideal grouping for the 150th Open?
Ooh, that's a good question.
There you go, Nathan.
Use this earlier.
Nathan, we'll get you on the
some guy channel.
Actually, that was for me.
It's nice to have a decent question for a change. I don't know. Who do I enjoy playing with? Somebody not slow.
Okay.
Obviously.
Name and shame.
No, I think we all know they are the slow ones. I'm not really fussed.
But come on, you're there. Open Championship. St. Andrews.
Tiger. Tiger's always fun.
And then what about, like, have you got like a best friend?
Can I be it? That's what Rick was hinting at.
Have you not got like a best friend on tour that you think?
Can I be your friend?
have you not got like somebody you always play great with?
No, not really. Who else? Ernie. Do you know what? I always used to play great when I played with Ernie and Freddie Couples because I just adopted their rhythms. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Do you like to play with faders of the golf ball or drawers? And does it influence you at all?
I honestly don't mind. I'm not really watching them.
I feel the questions that we're asking naturally are like about players, but because you're so good and so elite, you're not looking at what they're doing, surely. No, you're in your own world.
Yeah. So like I said, if they get on with it, don't get in my way, great.
Yeah.
Pete Toombs has asked, will Forrest get promoted?
Yes.
He's also put, if you ask, whatever you do, don't call them Notts Forest.
You did before as well. Notts County, innit?
God's sake, it's Notts County. It's Nottingham Forest.
Or Forest.
Yeah. Or the Reds.
John Dawson, what are your swing thoughts as you step up to hit the ball? And do you have a routine right before you pull the trigger?
Yeah, I have a routine that starts on the range. You know, I wouldn't just go out and hit 500 golf balls one after the other like some fools.
Yeah. I don't even get a hole in one.
When I practice properly, so I'll put a golf ball down and I'll pick a target, I'll go stand behind it, I'll walk in and I'll hit it, and that'll be the same routine, pre-shot routine and time over the golf ball as it will be out there today when I beat you.
Well, we've got the clickbait title for the podcast now, Lee Westwood called me a fool. That's the title of the podcast.
I think it's been a tough one.
There was a bit more of a question though, wasn't there?
No, just do you have a routine and do you have anything right before you pull the trigger?
You mentioned swing thoughts or something like that. So I've got about 5 or 6 swing thoughts that I go through as I'm warming up, and then I'll take my favourite to the golf course. And if that one doesn't work that day, then we'll try another one.
No way.
And if it's going well, then I'll keep the same swing thought, obviously, won't I? But if I run out of if I go through the six and nothing's working, then we're really
you
trouble.
Pray.
Yeah. Honestly, is that what you do? Yeah. And have these been the same? Are these consistent
Pretty
swing
much.
Thoughts?
Yeah,
no.
They've changed slightly over the years. You know what? I forget a load of them. You know, if I have a couple of weeks off, like today, I'll struggle to remember what I was working on at the Masters.
Oh my goodness! You need to leave little voice notes for yourself or write
it. Yeah, or video myself in a lesson.
Well, you've got two.
That's a good tip for amateurs, actually, if they're having a lesson. You know, everybody carries a phone now with video on it. Yeah. Video the lesson, then Big you time. Can jog your memory whenever, because they don't play every week sometimes, no. do they? So you can jog your memory 2-3 weeks down the line about, you know, and then you don't have to go for another lesson. Club pros will be loving me for that, won't they?
But if you give quality, you get more clients.
Yeah, exactly.
So that it still works in your favour.
Yeah.
Stephen Cargill, this is a tough question, maybe one you don't want to answer. Who do you prefer on the bag?
Helen
or Sam? And isn't there a third option as well? Don't you have a third caddy?
I use all sorts of different caddies if Helen and Sam can't do it.
Right, so it doesn't faze you. Yeah. But your number one, you preferred, is Helen.
Yeah, the conversation's just a little bit... Sam tends to talk about golf too much, which I hate.
Would you even talk about 30 years? If it was you and Helen, would it literally be a case of like, what do you fancy for tea tonight?
Yeah,
would you
even exactly. Have that? Yeah, yeah. Like. Or what colour do you think we should paint? You know that room.
I've got another. Right, you can pick. Watch it. This is from Nathan Young. Pick your favourite par 3, par 4, and par 5.
Oh, nice.
What, 11, 12, 13 at Augusta? That's got to be some run, isn't it?
Yeah.
All in a row.
Yeah, exactly. Four, three, and a five.
Although I'm not a massive fan of the change they've made to 11.
I believe it's made it really challenging, hasn't it, if you miss right?
Yeah. I didn't think it needed it. I thought it was a brilliant hole as it was. Mm.
Do you think...
It's still a brilliant hole, don't get me wrong. I just preferred it how it was before.
Did they ever make a change and then almost rectify it because it didn't quite work out?
I'm sure they do, but they'd never admit to it, would they?
No. Do you ever notice it though, or not really?
They say they've changed stuff, but it's very hard to see. You know, they'll not tell you what they've done. It's up to you to. That's the great thing about the place. You know, you have to learn it rather than it being written down. And
how does it bed in? How do they make it just look like it's been there forever?
Unicorn dust, I think. Sprinkle it on it.
Who is this? Is from Eamon Hunt. Who is the comedian in the Ryder Cup team?
Stenson's pretty good, pretty dry. Him and Poulter.
Think he'll be a good captain?
Yeah, very good, yeah. Yeah. I think it's about respect, the captaincy, and Henrik commands a lot of respect from everybody.
Yeah. I feel like you won't mess around with him.
Oh, we mess around with him, all right, yeah. Yeah. He can take a joke. He's a good lad.
I've got another one, really good one here. Your proudest actual moment in golf. This is from Colin Wallace. It was like your proudest, very like one moment.
Coming back from adversity,
right? Yeah,
yeah. You know, coming back from a slump makes me more proud than getting to world number one or Ryder Cups and stuff like that. You know, not giving in. I'm always a big fan of people that have not given in.
Tony Forrester has asked, looking back, was the one thing you would change in your career if it guaranteed a major win?
Really? I feel like I've made all the right decisions and good decisions at the time. You know, I'm quite happy with where everything sits.
Mm. Yeah.
I maybe wouldn't have been quite so aggressive on the first putt at Turnberry on the final green.
Yeah.
That went about 9 feet by. Yeah. But, that was mentally a bad decision. You know, I'd stayed in the present all week that week and got myself into a good position. Then I saw Tom Watson hit the fairway behind me and I thought, well, he's going to make four from there. He ended up making five and he went through the bat, even with a good shot. And, cost myself being in the playoff. But it was a mental error rather than a physical one.
Just on that.
I was trying to win the tournament, which you might say
is
a good thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we mentioned a couple of times like about how the media big things up. Do you think that's something that gets bigged up? Is that something that's bigger in the media about the whole major thing than it actually is for you? Obviously, you've had an amazing career, world number one, 25 wins on the European Tour, whatever. Like, it's a ridiculous career for how long, so competitive for so long. Is that something the media probably big up more than actually you're as bothered about?
They love stats, don't they? And they love comparing stuff. And, you know, people ask who's the greatest player of all time, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people say to me, Tiger. I said, well, it can't be, because you rate everybody on how many major championships you've won. And Jack's won the most major championships. So he's the greatest player of all time. So 1 minute they want it one way, and another minute they want it another way, generally to suit themselves, whatever.
Suit the narrative.
Narrative they're pushing, or they feel like going for that day or week or year or whatever, so...
That's the thing. Like, obviously, winning a major is a massive accomplishment. But there's been a number of players who've won a major and they're not done that much else. Like, you wouldn't want to do that, would you? You'd rather obviously have
longevity. A few different breaks and making a few different decisions at certain times. I could be sat here with four major championships.
Yeah.
But I'm not. But I don't think about it every day. It's not something that winds me up.
No. I've got a couple of bits here. I think it's kind of... I've got one more... Remind me, Ian sent a really nice comment. I want to tell you in a minute. This is from me. What advice would you give to young Lee Westwood? So if you could whisper into the ear of you the very first day you turned professional, what would you tell yourself?
I wouldn't tell myself anything. I've enjoyed the experience of learning and I've just had a brilliant time for 30 years.
But would you tell them, like, everything's going to be all right and enjoy it?
Yeah, not take it too seriously. Yeah, it's a game.
And if you were to do it all again, would you do anything differently?
The only thing I would do is I would take more responsibility for my own game, make more decisions. It's good listening to other people, but a lot of the time you end up living and making decisions based on their opinions too much. I would go with my own thoughts more.
Yeah, make your own decisions is what you're obviously doing now as well. this is not a question, but it's a lovely, lovely comment, right? Ian Keane's put, it's not a question, but I want to give a big thank you to Lee. Lee invited my dad and I to walk the 18th at Wentworth on the Pro-Am day. My dad had just been given a new trial as he's been given a terminal cancer diagnosis in April. He found He found his way through it and walked around the Pro-Am and was a goal I set him as part of his recovery, as when he was in hospital, he could walk 15 yards. Mm. The words of encouragement from Lee has helped him so much mentally that you could ever imagine. Dad is now playing golf 2 or 3 times a week and getting stronger and stronger. He's a true gentleman and a credit to the game. Mm. Wow. It's nice, isn't it? Like, you've helped someone get through something like that. The comments on that has been phenomenal. Oh, here's a picture.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. See if you remember it.
Yeah. Yeah, nice guy. Battler.
Oh, that's class.
He's playing golf, right?
Yep.
Was that this year?
He's a lesson that's for true anybody grit, innit? Not giving up.
That's great.
That is proper grit, isn't it?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Wow. You're worried about a 3-4 footer not going in.
Yeah, there you go.
Go and have a chat with him.
Exactly. It's all about perspective. So when I'm absolutely bricking it on the first tee today,
that'll be justified.
Yeah.
Well, Lee, you've been amazing. Thank you brilliant. So much for your time. I think we've got time to whack a few golf balls and get on the golf course.
See if it's still there, eh?
See if one of your 6 swing thoughts helps you today.
Might need all 6, Lee.
I might have to have a good stretch before I get going today. I won't be Rolls-Royce in it today.
What's Rolls-Royce in it?
Well, Rolls-Royces don't need a warm-up, do they? You don't need a warmer Rolls-Royce, so leave it ticking over for a while.
We wouldn't know.
Private jets, these Rolls-Royces. Right, thank you, Lee. Thanks, everyone, for listening and watching, and we shall see you all soon.
Ta-ra.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free
or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.